Recording has started.
Thank you. And go for it, Oliver.
Hi, I'm Oliver. I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hello,
Oliver.
Oliver.
So yeah, it's my first share, so I'm nervous and excited, and I keep trying to pray away when I try to plan it in my head, so I'm just gonna go for it. So background for me, I'm 21 years old right now. I guess I'll start from the beginning. I'm actually a twin as well. So I was raised with my nan because my parents were in addiction. But the way I was raised was, repress your feelings. You're not allowed to cry. So I remember from a very early age, I was already repressing how I felt. And I was quite an anxious child, actually. But I know, I was talking to my sponsor earlier, the thing I remember first being addicted to was attention. I just wanted to, I craved attention as a child. And that's continued until now. So yeah, as I got older, I had the whole typical addict things. I struggled with my feelings. I was so insecure of myself. And when I was 14, oh yeah, that's it. I thought I'll never touch cigarettes. I'll never do anything like that. But then when I was 14, I tried weed for the first time with friends. And mine was, I just wanted to numb my feelings. And I remember after I was obsessed, I was like, I need to get high again. I don't know how to get weed because I was trying to get in with this group I thought looked cool. I felt so insecure about myself. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll look even better. I look cool now I'm with them. I was searching up how to get high naturally. I was taking really strong coffee to try get high. Not that it worked. I was smoking weed here and there with these friends, and then I ended up drinking alcohol. The first time I drank alcohol, I mixed it with the weed, and I couldn't stop myself drinking this alcohol. I was at this friend's house, and I remember my friend, I got so drunk, they're like, don't move. They went to leave me for a minute, get me water, and I picked up the vodka and started drinking more. And then at that point, I don't know what happened. I blacked out, and apparently, three of them had to carry me, and my stepdad had to pick me up and pick me over his shoulder. That was like the first time I drank alcohol, and I just couldn't control it. My family were livid, but at this point, I actually moved in 2 years before that, moved into my mum's house to live with her. Luckily, being raised with my nan, what happened is she went abstinent at one point. Before that, she drank here and there, but she used to be an addict as well. I don't know much about that. But yeah, then I was grounded, and then I'd try find a way to get drunk again or smoke weed again. And I just remember being a massive people pleaser since I was a child as well. I just wanted everyone, and I still want everyone to like me. And I didn't know who I was. I was trying to fit into this mold for everyone, which was draining because that's impossible. I was trying to please my nan as well since I was a child, I wanted her to like, and my mum, I was like, yeah, it was difficult, but I'm aware of it now and I'm working with it. And then, yeah, as I got older, when I was 16, that's when I started trying other drugs. I went through different various abuse. I used that as an excuse to use, basically. But even before that, I wanted to try ecstasy, and I brought something off someone, and it was a mint, and I was gutted. But then after that, someone in the street offered me real ecstasy. I didn't know what it was going to do to me, and I just took it. It was that whole impulsivity and lack of self-worth and self-love for myself. And then I was in love with it. That first time I took that ecstasy, I was in love, but that didn't last. So I started taking lots of that, and then it did not last that high. I did not feel good anymore. I just felt like fucked on it. And then I tried different other drugs like acid. I was taking that once a month as well, and that's a long drug to be on. But that addict in me didn't care what it was, it would just take it. Then what happened was, at this time my dad was an addict and he got back into heroin and crack, and I started doing crack with him when I was 16. And yeah, that was just mental. It was, we were in a bed sit and there was just, I'd help them steal. I thought that, oh yeah, if I help them steal, I'm gonna seem like a really good person. I based my self-worth off how much drugs I took, what sort of drugs I took, and the stuff I did to get my drugs. I thought I was seen as a better person for that, which I'm not. It was all self-destructive. And what happened was all sorts of stuff happened during that time. All the horror stories you hear, but there was a dealer we ripped off, and then he was making threats to me, and it was just crazy stuff. But I didn't see how bad it was at the time. I was so normalized to it. Luckily, after 3 months, it come out. And so I then decided to take other drugs instead because I couldn't not take drugs. I needed something else to repress my feelings around that. So I did get what I now know is crack psychosis from that. Yeah, and then I carried on taking different drugs and I started leaving school because I was always a teacher's pet. I wanted everyone to like me, I wanted the teachers to like me. But in sick form, I was like, bad leaving. Yeah, but what ended up happening is I was grounded so many times as well because of my behavior. I didn't understand at the time. I blamed everyone else for my drug use. It was never my fault, even if I was the one taking it. But I was like, how dare my mum do this to me? How dare my nan do this to me? And the crazy stuff is, I blame them. I never had any anger towards my dad at this point either, though. But it was all just insanity. He was running off his disease. Like, I understand that now. Like, he, I've hurt people during my disease, and so did he. He just did what he had to do. Yeah, but now I don't talk to him. I've put those boundaries in place that I can love him from a distance. Because I now see my worth, that I don't want to go back those dark days of my life. Because I remember those come downs were horrific. Like that whole, oh my God, I want to die. I'm so depressed. And it's like, I need more. And it would never satisfy me. Never, ever satisfy me. So in the end, my mum was, she tried her best with me. And she kept wanting to kick me out, and then she'd let me stay, and I'd beg her and lie to her, manipulate her. Please let me stay. I won't do it again. I couldn't control myself. I had periods of where I was clean, but I was crazy. I had no program, and what would happen is I would get that pink cloud. I'd start to feel better, and then boom, I'd feel bored. I'd feel that empty void again. And I was like, I need something to fill this. And I would be bored. I'd be like, I did not know how to have fun and be clean. And that's what I've learned today is there is so many fun things to do. It's just I didn't know it at the time. And, drugs completely took away my aspirations and dreams. I didn't go to university because I just didn't think I'd be good enough at it. But what actually happened was I dropped out of sick form twice because of my drug use. I managed to go to college, and the thing is, I'm quite smart, so I got really good grades, but I used that as a reason for me to keep using. I was like, oh, but I'm all right at school, I'm still getting these good grades. But it didn't take away from the fact at how sad and lonely and depressed I felt. Yeah, and it was just draining. I do not miss waking up feeling shit. And then waiting and thinking, how am I going to get that next fix? Where am I going to get the money from? So yeah, I kept swapping one drug for another. and this kept happening. Yeah, but it was just, I was trying to repress so much of my feelings and my trauma, and I could not deal with any of it. I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't have the tools. And this is where I'm learning that my nan probably doesn't have the tools either. You know, she raised me to the best of her ability. And maybe she was taught not to cry and to repress her emotions. So now I'm learning, right, what can I do about this? I can't change it, but how can I learn to, you know, treat myself nicely and talk to myself with care and love? And I played a massive victim since I was a child. And I was a victim as a child. But as I grew up, I used that to manipulate people. That's the only way I knew how to express my pain. And then when I went into treatment, what happened is I was 19 years old and I was working. And I was working so many hours trying to find my drug habit, and it would completely drain me. I'd take more drugs to perk me up. I started taking drugs at work. I can't even remember how that happened. It just happened. I started snorting in the toilet. I did sleep-ins there. I'd wake up, snort. When my manager's there, I'd be snorting drugs. I did not care who was there. I got caught twice at work, high, by my colleague. And I kept doing it. I remember at one point, my manager, they actually pulled me in because my college told them I was using, not at work, but using in general. And I played the whole pity party thing, and I blagged myself out of it. As you do as an addict, you'll do anything to protect yourself from anyone knowing you're using, and so you can keep doing it. And I managed to do it, and I kept working, and it just still didn't stop me. Nothing would stop me. Not my family, you know, not my friends. I remember my friend cut me off because she found out, and I didn't care. I was angry at her. I'm like, how dare she? But, you know, why should she stay in my life for when I was acting that way? And she was doing it out of love, you know. She wanted me to stop, and she didn't know how to help me. I was so resentful, and I still have resentments. But that's what I've been doing through the steps, is working through those resentments. And I remember, I'm trying to stay in chronological order here. So building up, I was overworking, overusing. But, you know, towards the end of my using, you know, I'd try use people to get free drugs, and then I'd want to fuck off. You know, I didn't want to socialize and use anymore. I wanted to do it by myself, so I didn't have to share it or deal with anyone. What happened was I would binge day and night, literally. Sometimes I wouldn't sleep. I'd be using from the moment I woke up to the point I'd go to sleep. Sometimes I wouldn't sleep for 2 days as well, and then I'd have used up all my stuff in under 2 weeks, and then I'd have to wait until my next payday. And, you know, I remember just feeling that complete fatigue where my eyes would roll at work, where I couldn't stay awake. And that's torture when you've had no, when you need sleep and you can't. It's like, oh my God. So my mind's gone blank. So basically, yeah, I'd wait till next payday. And somehow, I don't know how, money would appear from somewhere. Free drugs would appear from somewhere. You know, that's where my faith first started. It was, I need some drugs. I need some money. And it would somehow fall into my lap. But what happened was I was getting physically ill. I was getting kidney infections and bladder infections from my drug of choice. And I cannot tell you, it was the most agonizing pain of my life, but that did not stop me. I remember laying there in agony and thinking, I'm never doing this again. What would I be doing? A couple hours later, I'd be going to pick up more. It would not stop me, that pain. I would completely forget about it. And I remember, I think I had a kidney infection and I felt really ill. I called the doctor and I said, you know, I think I've got a kidney infection. This is my situation. She was like, come up to the doctor's surgery to do a urine sample. I said, I can't, I feel too ill. She was like, okay, come in the morning. I laid there a couple hours later. I was like, I got the energy to go pick up drugs, which was 20 minutes on a bike, right? But I couldn't go a walk up to the doctor's surgery. That is like insanity. And it's like, I got this power out of nothing to go do that. And then I'd just try drown out the pain with more drugs, that repetitive cycle. And I would kid myself and think, oh, you know, if I have cranberry tablets, if I drink green tea, then I won't get kidney infection. It'll be okay. I was trying to cancel out my heavy drug use with some, like, I don't know, like natural products. Like, that was not going to work. Yeah, and that was my breaking point. Was after Christmas, I worked lots and I got loads of money from it Christmas, and I went on a massive binge. And I remember I just was like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah, I was 19 years old. And at this point, I had my own flat at this point as well. It was just exhausting. And I was just in complete desperation on my knees, and I called up my drug service. I was already seeing them, and I stopped seeing them because of my drug use. And I was like, I need rehab. And the guy said that, you know, they couldn't give me rehab because my drug of choice wasn't a class A. I was fuming. I was like, I'm in so much pain. Like, how can they do this? Like, I did not know what else to do. I asked to change drug counselor because I was like, I can't, I need help. And luckily this guy went above and beyond for me. I'm forever grateful for him. Like, he worked so hard for me to get a place into rehab. Things were postponed a bit because what actually happened was when my drug use was heavy, I ran out of money. And basically, long story short, I had a mental breakdown. And this is when my attention seeking really came out, as it always was. I didn't know what else to do with my pain. Stuff was coming up for me, memories, and I was withdrawing off my drugs as well because I had no money. And I could feel this before it was kind of happen. I was like, I'm going to have a mental breakdown. I can't handle this. I wasn't well. I wanted to be somewhere safe. And I have a lot of shame around what I did. But I took an overdose, right? I didn't know how else to ask for help. And I went into a psych ward. I remember that, oh my God, that relief. I was like, I'm safe. And then they told me I'd be out in 8 days. And I remember being so scared to go back out into active addiction because I knew what I was going to do. I knew, like, the pain active addiction caused me. And once I left, I used straight away. But I ended up having an episode on it. I don't remember what happened. And what happened was I took my drug of choice, had this episode with my friends, and they called an ambulance. I remember being so pissed off. I was like, oh, I want to use. So I discharged myself. I was like, no, I'm fine. So I'd go home and use more. But, you know, this actually helped me, right? Because it meant I had to wait longer to get into rehab. But the rehab I went into was a different one. And I really feel everything fell into place for me. What ended up happening whilst I was waiting, and the thing is, everyone has a different rock bottom. My rock bottom, I was still working. I still, you know, had a house, but as I was waiting for rehab, I couldn't work anymore for months. I was just so mentally ill from the drug use and everything else I hadn't dealt with. And then I had to move flat. I couldn't afford it. I had to go on benefits. Luckily, I had benefits. And, you know, I would get rejected from places, accepting me for a house, but the perfect one I feel for me came across. And it was no contract, you know, and it was like 500 quid a month. And the insanity was, she was a detective. I went in there, I blagged my way through it. She said to me she couldn't have anyone that used drugs. I said, oh, I'm a support worker, blah, 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 blah. Used in her house, which is insanity. I did not care. I just needed a place to go. I didn't consider the position I put her in. And I remember before I was go because I was going to go to rehab, I told her I was moving away, not to rehab. I accidentally texted her instead of my friend, "Oh, it's the last time I'm picking up." And she called me, and I had to blag my way out of that too. I meant, "Oh, picking up boxes." I don't think she brought into my BS. But we let it slide, and I went into rehab at 20 years old at this point, and I was so grateful to be there. I already knew I was going to move away from home. I was like, I cannot stay here around these people. I need a fresh start. And oh my God, let me tell you my behaviors. My family told me all of this behaviors before, and I was like, they don't know what they're talking about. And then when strangers tell you it, you're like, hang on a minute, maybe my family had a point. And do you know what? I built a really good relationship with my mum again. And oh, I forgot to tell out my coming out story. That's quite important, actually. I'll quickly push it in now. When I was 14 years old, I come out as a transgender man. But my mum struggled with it. My nan didn't, though, who raised me. So we had tension because of that. And I use that as an excuse to use as well, because I'll find any excuse to use. I'll use any reason, any feeling, if I'm feeling happy, excited, sad, insecure, it does not matter. My addict will use on it. And that's what I have to remind myself of. I'm very lucky because I went on hormones when I was 18. So I've been living as a man for a few years now. And it was when I was in treatment, my mum started calling me my new name, which was the best thing ever. And I don't know if it was because I started respecting her. I don't know. But before that, I was so manipulative, and I can still be. I thought when I was in treatment, now I'm clean, I don't have any defects. Oh no, that's my perfectionism kicking in, because they're still there. And I'm aware of them now, and they're painful. Really painful, because I like to think that I'm perfect and I want everyone else to see me that way, but I'm human. And that's not the case. But yeah, in treatment, I already decided as well I was going to get extra funding. I was like, if I'm hit, I've finally got this funding, I may as well make the most of this. I may as well stay as long as I can here, because I was used for years. I want extra time help, work on myself, because a few months is not in comparison to the years I was using. I learned so much about myself in there. And to think about where I was at that point, I was broken, I was scared, I needed everyone's validation. And I still do, but I've worked a lot on my confidence now. I didn't know who the hell I was. I would dissociate then. I could not connect to reality. I could not connect to people. I was riddled with fear. I didn't want to be around anyone. Treatment forced me to be in a social situation where I had to face my fears. And it was the best thing for me. And do you know what? Treatment was the best point in my life. Apart from starting testosterone, I felt safe. I remember that feat. I felt safe, because in active addiction, a lot happens, as we all know. And I was like, wow, I'm safe now. I am safe. And it was beautiful. And I remember just feeling that feeling of peace. I never felt that from drugs, ever. I will convince myself I will. But I never felt that peace. And I remember just feeling like sitting, watching Zoom with my pals and feeling connected to my higher power and thinking, everything's okay. I had no worries in the world at all. because it's all in the mind for me. My fears are all in my mind. You know, I'm constantly trying to find that next fear. You know, I'm like, when things are calm, I'm like, oh, why is it calm? Something bad's going to happen. And then I create a problem that wasn't even there. Yeah, so treatment, I picked up resentments from, because what happened was I realized some people reminded me of other people in my life, my family members or other people that have abused me. And I projected that onto these people I've never met before. But, you know, it's such a surreal experience, treatment, but it's amazing because you get to learn so much about yourself. But I had so many feedback groups about my behavior, but that is how I grew. You know, I grew so much from those feedback groups, and I had to learn to bite my tongue and not get defensive. I would stay silent and reflect on it. Doesn't mean I wouldn't get pissed off at what they were saying, because I knew they were right. And I didn't like people telling me bad things about myself, but I needed to hear it. And I was always grateful for those groups, because the outside world's different. You don't get those environments because everything is so concentrated in treatment. What happened was I got 2 months extra funding. So I did, 20 weeks in treatment. I went up to step 7. My perfectionism is I wanted to redo stuff. I wanted to redo my steps because I didn't think it was good enough. I had insanity. What happened actually was the first day I was in treatment, they gave me my step 1. I did it in one day because I wanted to please them and I wanted to distract my head. But what that did is I didn't process any of it. I still thought I could use my drug of choice. I didn't see how I was powerless and unmanageable. I viewed it like it was my baby. So I got to redo that one a lot slower, but I learned from that. But once I got to my step 4, oh, wow, I rushed through it without even realizing. I just didn't want to sit with those feelings. But to feel is to heal, and feelings are for feeling, but I don't like feeling them. And what happens is when I push them down, they get stronger. I'm starting to learn how to feel the pain. I'm still working on it. But when I accept the pain, it flows a lot better and I feel a lot better afterwards. But for step 4 for me is one of my favorites because it was so freeing, you know, to get all that heavy stuff off my chest. And I was honest. I did not leave anything. If I had a feeling I wanted to leave something out, I knew it had to go in. Because at the end of the day, this is what's going to impact my recovery. If I leave something out, it will niggle me. And I hate that feeling. And that is also why I like to share in meetings, because I hate that feeling of when I want to say something and I don't. And it comes with practice for me. You know, the more I do it, the easier it is. The less I share, that's when I'm like, oh, do I really need to share? Do they need to hear this? And I get that whole self-obsession, self-centeredness, caring what people think, thinking the world revolves around me. But anyway, higher power stuff as well. Oh, my God. I was atheist before I went into the fellowship. I was anti-religion because I was so scared that religion would judge who I was as a transgender man, which is my own assumptions. So instead of feeling rejection, I showed anger because it's easier that way. I was so scared of people rejecting me. I remember seeing a cross around someone's neck in treatment and I thought, oh no, she's going to reject me. But she's so supportive of me. She wanted to go to Pride with me. And I remember there was this other person. I didn't think he would accept me because of my own assumptions. He was an older generation. He was so accepting of me. And I remember that beautiful moment of, wow, Oliver, you're so stuck in your head and how you view the world. I was so black and white, and I still am, but I'm starting to see more colour now. As time goes on, as I'm learning more, as I'm seeing things from a different perspective. But higher power stuff. I just kept my ears open when people would talk. I kept an open mind. What's beautiful about this program is it's your own higher power. And I love that because it is mine. It's mine to conceptualize. And I sort of got that connection pretty quickly. I was very lucky in that way, and I'm really blessed because I know other people can struggle. First, I started off with energy, like Mother Nature. But as time has gone on, something seems bigger than that. It seems more intense than that. Some stuff I just cannot explain. How things have fallen into place so nicely. And I forget that because my head will panic thinking something bad's going to happen. Oliver, remember how everything else has fitted in so well. I started to pray, but I just, you know, I've heard just pray to whatever's out there. For me, I had to break that assumption of what I thought God was. For me, God is loving and caring, non-judgmental. And that's what works for me, is having a God of my understanding that way. And God has carried me through some tough times. So once I got out of treatment, it was scary. But I did everything I knew I had to do. Service, sponsor, meetings, step work. I did 90 meetings in 90 days, and that really saved me. The first week or two, I was doing sometimes twice a day. I was in like survival mode. I don't want to relapse. It was a healthy fear. And this is what I love about myself, actually, what I've learned is my drive for my recovery. And I'm really blessed at my age to be thinking like this. My head isn't, oh, I could do a bit more. No, I've had enough. After about 6 years, that was enough for me. Too much pain to go through. And the happiness I have felt in recovery is amazing. I did not trust anyone before because I did not trust myself. You know, I was a massive manipulator. I thought everyone else was manipulating me too, and my people pleasing. When I started to trust people, it was just amazing because we're not in active addiction anymore. We all want to get better, you know? And it's sort of learning that these people love me and I can love them back. And, you know, I'm safe here now. You know, I'm not around, you know, drugs anymore and all that messy stuff. And, so when I got out, it took me about 4.5 weeks to find a sponsor. And I was panicking. I was like, I need a sponsor. Once I got a sponsor, I struggled to call her. I was like, you know, overthinking it. But now I risk it. I risk it for a chocolate biscuit. I would rather not relapse. And if I tell her something and it's crossing boundaries, I'd rather that than me relapse, you know. I will take the risk now. I just do it because my head will think me out of it. Should you call it? Just do it, Oliver. I started building a little support network, but I'm still insecure thinking, do I have enough friends? Am I doing enough? Because I get so anxious in meetings, face-to-face meetings. I, you know, even coming to this meeting 10 minutes before, I was, you know, scared. I'm like, oh God, I'm going to have to make conversation, blah, blah, blah. And but I just do it now. Even if I feel anxious, I just get to the meetings. So I started the green and gold, and I'm really grateful because for me, it will help look really deep into myself. And I love doing that. I love analyzing myself. Yeah, and I set boundaries too. When I was in treatment, I started to set boundaries. I said to my family, I'm no longer drinking anymore. And they drink. And my mum, who used to use drugs, well, alcohol is a drug as well, now drinks. She didn't do 12 steps. So for me, I had to make sure I set those boundaries. And I didn't go home for about a couple of months either. Because my recovery is so important to me. You know, I have to put it above everything, and I completely understand that because I won't have my family or my dreams or my aspirations or my house if I don't put it first. And you know, I discovered new things about myself, like my passion for storytelling. And I think this is where there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. Sometimes I go into arrogance. That's one of my defects. But you know, my sponsor even said to me, either I feel inferior to people or superior. And that is so true. Like I jump from one to the other. Yeah, so anyway, I w was offered to get top surgery for my chest. And I was actually a year before that supposed to get it, but because of my using, I had to cancel it. And I was not healthy physically and mentally either. I was too underweight. But this time, I was. My head felt crazy when I come out of treatment. Yeah, I felt very insane, powerless, unmanageable. And I wanted to get that surgery done. And luckily, my higher power stepped in. Because I was decided to stay at my mum's for a month whilst I healed, and my mum was going to be on holiday, so I had to postpone it for a month. But that month was great because it meant I could finish my step one, read it out to my sponsor. I met a new friend who's been a massive support during this time for me, and I learn every something new every day about myself. Now I'm not using, I'm not in an emotional coma anymore. I could never learn about myself before. You know, I was immature and I can still be immature, but I didn't see it then. I wanted to keep being like that, but now I'm not actually, no, you know. So I sort of had a plan for my surgery and I was so scared to relapse. The changes in my body, but you know, it all fell into place. You know, I was finding little anxieties, and it once I talked to other addicts, they said a simple solution: call this person about it. You know, if you're worried, and like, you know, something about my hotel, and I just called them, and the issue was rectified. I'm like, what? It's that simple? And my head wants to complicate everything. So yeah, I went through the surgery and I kept praying. God got me through those times. I would just pray, even for the travel. Help me get through this, God. Help me stay focused. And it was hard. They, you know, I had morphine. And I told them my situation. And they were going to give me Kakadu. I said I was an addict. They gave me paracetamol. And then I was scared it wouldn't be enough. But luckily, they didn't give me any Kakadu to take home. But I remember I felt depressed after this surgery. I'm like, what's going on? And I heard that like anesthetic can do that to you, you know? And I will tell this time at my family was just so difficult. And the thing that got me through it was meetings, calling my sponsor. I called her twice on my surgery day. You know, if it takes that, I will do it. Even if I get insecure thinking, oh God, what's she gonna think? I had to do it. I was in survival mode. I was like, I can't relapse at home. I had so many triggers. I would do about, you know, 5 to 6 Zoom meetings a week. I was trying to do readings as my service post temporarily. And I was doing, well, I've waited a couple of days after my surgery and then I was doing step work again. Because step work keeps me sane. And helped me discover parts of myself. And I was on step two at this point, and it was a perfect step because I felt so insane. I was around insanity because my family were drinking alcohol. I already set my boundaries with them beforehand anyway. And I remember after my surgery, my stepdad said they could always give me some of their Cocodamol. I was like to my mum, no, please don't do that. And I'm so proud of myself because I could have easily been like, okay, then. And there were, I remember I got really ill from a virus and I was like, oh, Cocodamol will sort me out. I'm like, no, fuck off, addict. No. How long do I have, by the way, so I can start winding it down? Okay, long story short, I got through it clean because I did all the four suggested things and I prayed to God. And I'm now home and I am struggling. But I've got hope now that I'm going to get through it with the fellowship and outside support. But yeah, I'll leave it there. Thank you.